T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, man. It's time for Mike and Squid's Grand Prix Podcast. Brought to you by Hey Man Blonde Ale. Shenanigans in every can. Now, with the F1 season underway, here's Mike and Squidbilly.
Hey, guys. Welcome to week 2 of Mike and Squidbilly's Grand Prix Podcast. Again, we're waiting on corporate approval to call this thing Formula 101. So for now, we'll just go with Squid and Mike's Grand Prix thing. Hey, man, what'd you think of the first Grand Prix of the year now that I've turned you into a Formula 1 convert as Mercedes dominates the Australian Grand Prix?
Well, I'm not going to lie. I woke up on a Sunday morning with a little bit of a headache from, went out in the new town and into a little brewery they have down there. And so I had a little bit of a headache, but you know what? I got in there, turned it on, and the start was really surprising to me.
Right.
Because you had the Mercedes get out to good starts. Obviously, Bottas got, he beat Hamilton off the start. And then, my guy, Daniel Ricciardo, in his new ride, and Renault.
Again, Renault, we're going to, first things first, we are going to teach Squidbilly how to say, I'm never going to get you to roll your R's, Renault. Ren, like Frank Ren, the former Braves GM, and no, Renault, say it.
Renault.
There you go, buddy boy. So Renault with Daniel Ricciardo and his Australian Grand Prix bad luck continues. He just cannot catch a break in his home Grand Prix. He has never been on the podium down under. And Daniel Ricciardo, for those not familiar with F1, drove with great success for Red Bull from Perth, Australia. And this race was crazy. He comes flying down the inside, puts his right tires on the grass, and unbeknownst to Daniel Ricciardo and apparently everyone else on the circuit, there is a sewer grate. He knocks the wing off the car. There's a depression in the grass. Wing goes flying. His day is completely ruined. A gutter ditch, it was described by the Melbourne newspaper. And that's all she wrote for Daniel Ricciardo. Nico Hülkenberg did a better job. Kept his car on the track. But what a brutal start. At first, you're like, what the wing goes flying. Ricciardo's going for a ride. He's lucky he saved the car in turn one.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I got a little mad about it. Yeah. I'm like, wait a second.
It's my guy.
What happened? Yeah, because it is my guy. And so he's off, then he has to come through the pits, and then they replace his front wing. And so that was really frustrating. But, the start for the Mercedes was great. And then, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but there's some things that we'll get to in a minute here in the end of the race that happened with Ferrari that really rubbed me the wrong way. Now, I get it. It's the politics of it. Mm-hmm. But then you get the Williams cars didn't get off to a good start. I think it was Kubica?
Robert Kubica.
Yeah, he has to go in the pits to start off, too. He, I believe, had some front wing damage as well to start the race. So, it wasn't a good start for a couple of guys because they ran into some issues.
Well, the funny thing was, we didn't know it at the time, as Valtteri Bottas, who, again, gets his fourth win of his career for Mercedes, and just an unbelievable effort. If you didn't see it, it was total domination. New point system, even got the fastest lap. So he leaves Australia with the championship points lead and max points with 26. But Lewis Hamilton actually had the pole. Bottas had a much better start. Lewis had some wheel spin, was very cryptic in the post-race interviews about what was going on. Did spend some time looking at what used to be called the barge board. Underneath the car, there's this plank for FIA regulations, but there's also a piece of aerodynamics that fell off, and it's on the left side of his car. So it's a very small piece. I think they said it's less than 2 inches wide, but apparently that was all it took to really knock Lewis's aerodynamics to the point where he was 24 seconds at one point behind Valtteri Bottas, still was able to hang on to second.
And look, I know Lewis Hamilton he's the gold standard. He drives the best equipment. He is, if you're a NASCAR driver, he's what Jimmy Johnson was during his seven, a little bit cooler, but what he was during his seven championship run. But I felt like he kind of got a little, and he kind of got down, and mentally it felt like he kind of checked out a little bit.
Well, because they here's the thing if you're not familiar with Formula One, and Squidbilly kind of inferred, yeah, there's team orders. Okay, the team principal, it would be like the crew chief in NASCAR, the football coach in NFL. These guys sometimes will dictate through their each driver has his own technical guy, has his own race strategist. There's a bevy of engineers that are sitting there on pit road looking at the monitors, and they're looking at the telemetry, looking at the data. Lewis Hamilton, once it's clear that Bottas Hamilton's got the sled and Lewis doesn't. They bring him in early. So Lewis then pits. Later on, of course, immediately he realizes, well, no, but the earlier you pit, the worse your chance of winning, unless you're going to go on a long strategy of a harder tire compound. So then Lewis immediately asks, why did we pit early? So, yes, he gets in his bag a little bit, but he's able to keep it together and then set all the right things post-race. But obviously, he's going to talk to his engineers about what was wrong with the setup and obviously that piece of aerodynamics that fell off the car.
And did they not go with that medium tire when they brought him in, which is right. A little bit of a – if you watch the broadcast, look, they get pretty good information. And the tire he put on seemed to be a little bit of an enigma. They don't really know what they got there necessarily.
New tire compounds, by the way. So they got so crazy, did Pirelli. And Pirelli's the official tire provider for F1. And again, for guys that are hardcore Formula 1 fans, you know this, but if you're new to our podcast, Mike and Squid's Grand Prix podcast, we try to break it down and give you the information on the fly. So they used to have the ultra soft, the super duper soft. Now they've kept it simple. It's a red is the soft, you got the medium is the yellow, and then the hard tire is the white. Harder compound is going to last longer, but you'll have less handling. Yeah. But it'll get you to the end of the race. The tires do look shiny this year. They put a nice gleam on them, too, when they come off a pit road. They look kind of cool.
They do look cool, but that was another thing. You're like, well, I don't know if it really does much for you. Oh, great, you got a shiny tire. Well, if it doesn't work, it doesn't matter.
But the thing with Lewis, yes, he kept a brave face on it. And then in the post race, there was the interview that you saw on Sky Sport and ESPN. By the way, they carry the Sky Sport
commercial free,
which is like the ESPN of England. But these guys do such an amazing job. You've got champions like Damon Hill in post race analysis. Martin Brundle is fantastic. They've just got some really intelligent guys. Giving you great information over the course of the race. But it wasn't until the media scrum that when the drivers are behind pit road or behind their haulers, where a member of the media from England asked Lewis, and he kind of gave a cryptic answer about maybe they didn't have something set up properly for the engineering on the car, for the wheel spin, then you throw in the aerodynamic thing. So I think Lewis realizes, like, hats off to Valtteri, and we'll talk about Bottas's best drive of his life. But Lewis knows he'll be fine. He'll be fine.
Yeah, and Bottas is a guy who has moved up. I mean, he raced with Williams for a while. Now he's got – and everybody knows – well, excuse me. If people coming around to Formula One, Williams is a team that has had its moments with championships, but for the last –
they're awful.
But for the last 4 years, they have been garbage. And they're trying to find their way. So Bottas now has some of the best equipment. And you know what? Good. I loved it. I loved seeing that guy do what he did.
Well, the thing about Bottas is he's a Finnish driver, and the old joke back in the day, going back to Mika Hakkinen, was if you want to win, grab a Finn. You know, and my guy Kimi Räikkönen is one of my favorites, and we'll go through the field guys throughout the podcast. We're starting though at the podium, and Valtteri Bottas with the best race of his life. He didn't win a race last year. He won a couple races. He won two seasons ago. Last year was awful. He's wrecking cars, not qualifying well at times. Lewis clearly with the pace. So they bring in Esteban Ocon, who lost his drive with Force India, which is now Racing Point. Yeah. So they got a guy over his shoulder who's got the talent. So there's pressure on him. According to the coverage, and I read an article in Autosport. Check out autosport.com, by the way. Eventually, you got to buy the subscription, but you get some free stories at first. But they were saying that Bottas Squid, to get his basically get his balls back, he went rally driving in Finland and in Europe over the offseason, get some confidence, get feel good in the car, like driving again. And then he comes out, and not only does he win the race, despite engineers telling him not to, he goes for the fastest lap and gets it.
That was the ballsiest move of the race, and we saw some things in that race, especially mid-pack, where guys like Lando was racing hard and really held some guys up. Gio did the same thing, but literally was told the team was told as a whole, and that was includes Lewis Hamilton, we will not go for the fastest lap point if we're 1 and 2. And he comes on the radio, goes, I want 26 points. I want that 26 point. And they're like, well, he wanted to pit. And they had a big enough lead. I think they were at one point, they're up by 30 seconds. They had a big enough lead. They told him no. And then, I want to say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, one of Verstappen, Max Verstappen, took the fastest lap.
Right.
And all of a sudden, to steal from Days of Thunder, Bottas came on and probably not this boy, but I'm dropping the hammer. And then you heard Harry Hogg say, no, you're not. And he did it anyways, and he went and grabbed the fastest lap. It was a really cool moment.
Yeah, Liberty Media. Yeah, that Liberty Media who owns the Braves, they also run Formula One. And one of the things that they threw out there and the FIA signed off on it was, let's add a point for the fastest lap of the race, which we weren't sure how it was going to turn out. So far, it's really exciting because basically, if you have a margin, let's say if you're in second place by 24 seconds, you may have enough time to get in into pit road, put a fast set of tires on, and go for that bonus point and still hold your position in the race. And Bottas had enough time. He could have actually done that, but they didn't want to risk it, obviously. So Bottas wins 20 seconds ahead of Lewis Hamilton. Verstappen was 2 seconds back of Lewis, but at one point he had closed the gap to within a second. And in Formula One, they have this thing called DRS, drag reduction system, which basically is a wing on the back of your car that opens up and goes horizontal, which creates less drag. So you get more horsepower, more speed going down the straightaway. So when you get within that second, the wing can open up. And man, Verstappen was all over Lewis. Unfortunately, I think it was turn three that he cut the corner, goes over the grass, and lost all the time and never made it back up.
Yeah, and it's kind of the equivalent if you're playing a video game as a kid where you had the little nitro boost button, and right. It kind of works that way. just want to clarify one thing, because I'm sure people are already thinking, you know, if you're in the top 10, you get points in Formula One for the drivers and the constructor. Well, if you're out of that, you're not eligible for the extra point either. So if you're thinking, well, what happens with the guy who's so far behind while he's in this put on and almost run like a qualifying lap? Well, right. He's not eligible for the points. It doesn't really matter if he does that.
It's only top 10 finishers. You're right.
But just to clarify, you know, kind of moving a little bit, Ferrari was somewhat disappointing.
Yeah. Now, for guys who have been following spring, now what they do in their equivalent of spring training for Formula One is winter testing. And they go for a couple of weeks to Barcelona, which they're going to that race this year coming up in May. But back last month, they go and do all the testing. And there's a little bit of gamesmanship. Sometimes guys sandbag. Sometimes they try to, you know, not let the media see what they're doing, what the new aerodynamics looks like, et cetera. They also do unveil the cars that week leading up to the testing. But anyway, coming out of Barcelona winter testing, Ferrari was faster in some cases. Is 0.03, 0.04 seconds to Mercedes, which is a lot. Doesn't sound like anything. It's like, but in Formula One, that means a lot. Anyway, Mercedes gets their second engine package in, and they're just faster than Ferrari. And Ferrari, if anything, maybe they jacked up the setup. Not really sure. You got a new guy running the show at Ferrari, Mattia Binotto. Now, this guy was the technical director for years. Before him, you had a guy, it's good, you'd love this guy. Looks like a bad guy in a James Bond movie. I tweeted the pictures earlier in the week at Mike Bell ATL. But Maurizio Arrivabene literally looked like a bad guy in a Bond movie. He came up in the vending side of Philip Morris. Marlboro is still a sponsor of Ferrari, though you don't see Marlboro because cigarette advertising is banned. So this dude has got little ink. He's got the beard. He's always got a heater going. Anyway, he ran the show, and he ran it through fear, through intimidation. Ferrari's always got the boss over your shoulder, and apparently it just got so pressure-packed. After looking good early in the season, they just folded. So they went with the guy who's on the technical side, and he looks like a guy who got shoved in a locker in high school. So Binotto's under pressure already from the Italian media, because for those who don't realize, Ferrari hasn't won in over a decade a championship. I know that you're saying, well, that sounds crazy. There was a time, and we'll talk about this over the course of this season, but I'm just giving Squid a little history lesson. You know about Michael Schumacher. They won 5 championships. Last championship was with Kimi, but that's almost over 10 years ago. They had a guy named Ross Braun and Jean Todt. They now run Formula One. They run FIA. These were the brains behind Ferrari. For years, Ferrari didn't win championships. All the intrigue I just told you about, people getting fired, you know, the Italian media losing their mind. Well, you had a Englishman and a Frenchman come in. And with great aerodynamicists, and you had a guy named Luca de Montezemolo who ran the show and didn't get over their back, and they won all these championships, and they were fantastic. And then eventually these guys left, and they've never been the same. So that's why Ferrari is just still reaching. In that interim, Red Bull won 4 championships with Vettel, and now Mercedes has the car. There's always a Yankees or a Red Sox or a Patriots kicking butt in Formula One. Right now it's Mercedes.
Yeah, and they're, I mean, we saw what they did this weekend, but you know what? Red Bull with the new, I don't know if we noticed a difference with the Honda engine.
They loved it though. They're happy with it.
Well, they're happy with it, but you know, Verstappen ran a great race, and I don't like him. I think we clarified that he pushed my boy.
Explain to the listeners of the podcast why you don't like Max Verstappen.
You know, Verstappen, and we went in depth. So if you're just hearing this one, you might want to go back and listen to the first one. We talked about this dynamic, but Verstappen was the young guy, came in and was paid like he had won something when he hadn't, and he pushed my guy Daniel Ricciardo to the brink of leaving.
And they did sort of manipulate, I believe it was the Spanish Grand Prix for his first win. So you could tell they were playing favorites with the young kid, and Ricciardo realizes that he's not going to be the guy.
And honestly, that doesn't sit well with me. So Ricciardo left. Of course, we just talked about it earlier on, about the struggles he had at his home race. And he really has bad luck in his home race. And quite frankly, he goes somewhere like Monaco, which is one of the creme de la creme, and he always has a good race.
Right. Well, because, again, the Red Bull, that's – now, real quick for the cars, Mercedes has got the perfect package, combination of aerodynamics and horsepower. Ferrari, we thought was going to be faster. Red Bull always does better on the tracks with more turns. They've got more downforce. They're always better in the – and if you watch the race, usually in Formula One, you watch the coverage, you'll see the sectors, and you'll see three sectors. Like, and so they divide it up. And if there's a sector that has a lot of turns, Red Bull is always going to be kicking butt in that sector. Australia, the Melbourne Grand Prix at Albert Park, it's sort of a street surface, but it's a mishmash of some of the things you're going to see over the course of the year, but it's unique to itself. They're going to Bahrain here next year. Ferrari has won the last two races at Bahrain, and Red Bull is always competitive. But you'll see, guys, there's tracks like Hungary and Monaco with a lot of turns and twists where Red Bull will do well. And then you go to places like Montreal and Nürburgring or Hockenheim where the straightaways, and that's always going to play to Mercedes and Ferrari.
So we were talking about Ferrari and what they haven't done so far in this year. We talked about how fast they were in testing, how they weren't fast in this race. Well, they made an interesting move, and this is part of Formula One, and when you get into this, you're going to accept it. But Charles Leclerc, which is our boy,
right?
That's one of the things that we share, and this is we like a couple of the same drivers. That's one of them.
Young stud came up from he's from Monaco, and he's racing last year for Alfa Romeo, which is a Ferrari sort of engine team. They're like a feeder team for Ferrari. But anyway, he's a young stud who gets the drive next to Vettel.
Has a really fast car. He is in. He's running in fifth now. He might have been able to. He wasn't going to catch Verstappen. Okay,
but he could have definitely caught and passed Vettel.
Yes, because in the end, he only finished a second off Sebastian Vettel, who is his teammate. He gets up there to him. He was only a second off. They say, all right, just go ahead and back it off. You're not going to catch Verstappen. Don't catch Vettel, basically. He backs it off, goes back to 4 or 5 seconds, and then he was back to a second because he was also because he was going to go for the fastest lap. They told him not to, but then he ends up just catching back up because he was that much faster.
Right.
Look, I get it, everything, but – if you take everything and put all of your efforts into getting one guy the fastest car and the win, mm-hmm. and he's coming up short, forget that guy. I also understand the other part that you don't want your guys racing each other.
And wrecking each other.
What
right.
happened with, I think, Ricciardo and Verstappen had that issue once.
Well, Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton famously taken themselves out a number of times, the most famous one of the Spanish Grand Prix. So I'm with you there. But here's the thing. I think Ferrari at some point is going to get frustrated with Vettel. Vettel is four-time champion, Squid, but he was great to start the season, made some big mistakes, you know, lost his cool a number of times. I'm telling you, I've seen Ferrari pull this stuff before. If they're going to give Vettel about halfway through the season, and if Ricciardo is consistently faster, if Leclerc is consistently faster, they're going to let Leclerc become the kid. I'm telling you.
Well,
I have a feeling now. Again, I know a way to prove this. Vettel is the champion. Vettel's got the juice for the championship. He gets the extra point because it's 12 points for fourth. And real quick, 25 for first, 18 for second, 15, 12, all the way down to 1 point for the 10th place. After that, nothing matters. You only get points for the top 10. I just got a feeling if Leclerc keeps doing this, eventually Ferrari is gonna. They're gonna. There was some weirdness with Vettel down the stretch last year. That's all I'm saying.
Well, and that's why it was also an interesting move, but. Yeah. Look, I get it, but it doesn't mean I have to like it. And I'm not going to like it, and I didn't like it. And I just think that it's one of those things where, look, let the cream rise to the top. Don't hold it back. Because, look, it's not an American sport per se, even right. though we have an American team and Haas, and we both pull for – that's our other guy that we like is Magnussen over there at the Haas team. But let those guys fight for it. But there has been some instances, and it's a big risk when you do let your those teammates fight when – ultimately, you're guaranteed 22 points, and I'm sure that's the way they're like, look, we're guaranteed 22 points. We don't care who gets a 12 and who gets a 10, because at the end of the year, it'll work itself out. I just like to see guys go for it and race each other, and that's why we all watch. So,
all right. Now, again, they have a Constructors' Championship, have a Drivers' Championship. The most craziest was the one 2 years back. Nico Rosberg takes away a championship that should have been Lewis's. They had a new clutch. Lewis never got a handle on the starts that year for Mercedes. And Nico Rosberg, who I cannot stand, won the championship and then quits. His father was a champion. He's a father-son champion. And then he doesn't defend his title, which rubs a lot of people in Formula One the wrong way. And now Nico can sit there as an analyst and take pot shots at everybody. I don't care for the guy. But anyway, to Squidbilly's point – to finish first, you got to finish. So you can't have these guys wrecking each other. Famously, last year, Red Bull took each other out. Daniel Ricciardo and Verstappen into the back of each other at Baku in Azerbaijan. So it's, I know what you're saying. You want to see teams racing, but you want to see them race smart. Here's the finish, as we said, podium. Bottas, Hamilton, then Verstappen. Vettel, then Leclerc, and the two Ferraris, fourth and fifth. Let's go through the field, man. And for those who don't know, there's an American-run team. And one of our favorite drivers, aggressive guy, and he was on the money, Kevin Magnussen, comes home sixth and gets 8 points.
Yeah, I thought it was a good race for Magnussen. And I thought Haas did decent until they had another slip-up in the pits. With our, I say our boy, tongue in cheek, but Grosjean.
Yeah. New garçon, Romain Grosjean.
And you know what? In all seriousness, not the way he needed to start the season. Mentally, he's a little bit soft. He gets in his own head, and look, it's not. I'm not taking shots. It's it's very documented that he doesn't do well. When he has one mistake, they seem to kind of build, and now he goes in the tanks. So let's hope he can rebound, but right. He had to retire due to a bad stop, I believe, a loose tire.
Yeah, and for those who are not familiar, there's a great documentary on Netflix. We talked about this last week, Drive to Survive, and if you hadn't seen it, also great, there's another documentary about Williams and the great Williams team, and unfortunately their fall from grace and the sad state of affairs as Frank Williams' daughter Claire tries to run this team, which is going nowhere. These are all on Netflix. You can check them out if you're a racing fan.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I was going to give that as a view an option at the end because I'm midway through it. I get, for you guys to know, do have a little bit of busy. I do get my Netflix viewing on my phone on the treadmill, and right. I'm about halfway through the Williams.
Isn't that good though? Great
story.
Very
good. You know, they talk about how his wife really was a driving force behind the team and helped get the team where it was, and he goes through his struggles. But yeah, it's very good. If you haven't got a chance to check it out.
Yeah, it's the biography of Sir Frank Williams and the Williams Racing Team, so check that out on Netflix. And we'll get to the Williams and, that, unfortunately, the dead last cars in a second. But getting back to Magnussen and Grosjean, last year, and it was documented on that Netflix Drive to Survive doc, they have a new tire changer, and they literally can't get the wheel on right on both cars. Both cars have to retire because it's wobble-wobble. Yeah. The wheel is not threaded properly. This time, they don't have a problem with Magnussen. He gets a top 10, but it's the same left front. Grosjean's able to do 15 laps, and eventually they have to park the car. He gets loose, gets some air, and you see the wheel literally. They've got the technology, and they've got tethers in place where the wheel's not going to come off and come flying through the stands, but you could tell it wasn't attached properly. So second time in a row, that's bad. I mean, Gene Haas, who runs a team in NASCAR, will be looking for answers on that one. And Gunther, I read it earlier, Gunther Steiner, the head of Haas Racing, basically just said that, yeah, we've just been snake bit here.
Yeah, he does. He says that there were jinx, and, you know, he's confident of avoiding more, you know, other stops like that. But, you know, go down to seventh right behind Magnussen, and oh, look who it is.
Magnussen's arch rival, Nico Hülkenberg, now a guy that's had a lot of talent but has always had poor timing on when he's at the car, kind of like the way Alonso's career ended. But he comes in seventh. Everybody outside of Magnussen got lapped by Valtteri Bottas. That's how dominant Bottas' performance was. Kimi Raikkonen in the Alpha, he comes in eighth. And real quick, give a shout-out. You mentioned it earlier, his partner in crime. Now, you talked about how team orders can work to maybe hurt racing. In some cases, you can help your partner. Antonio Giovinazzi does a fantastic job holding up a number of cars that would have given some pursuit to Kimi Raikkonen to help him hold on to that top 10.
Boy, he held him up for, correct me if I'm wrong, 10 laps maybe?
Right.
And this was a guy out there on old tires. These are guys that have pitted, and he is holding them up. And I think it was Lando Norris was behind him at one point.
Driving McLaren.
And just couldn't get by him. He did a phenomenal job. If anybody's out there watching going, well, you know, the equipment's not great, and look what he can do, because he did a great job. That was some of the best racing all race, along with Pierre Gasly, who is taking over Daniel Ricciardo's spot in the other Red Bull, came up from Toro Rosso. Him and I'm going to butcher his name, but Daniel Kvyat.
All right, you're close, because I've heard the English pronounced it different ways. I've heard Kvyat, but anyway, Danny Kvyat, he came up through Red Bull, Toro Rosso program, was in the Red Bull, then got demoted, was out, is back in. And I don't know if this is like a guy who's got a second chance and he's just doing a better job, you know, but a Jim Plunkett-like return to Formula One for Daniel Kvyat, who gets the final top 10 spot and does a great job keeping the guy with better equipment, Pierre Gasly, who was was in a Toro Rosso, and that's not good for Gasly in his Red Bull debut. He could not get past Kvyat.
Yeah, and Gasly came out with new tires.
Right.
Came out of the pits with good tires, and he came out, and just so you know, with when these race cars – they get a little bit of distance between themselves.
But it takes a few laps to get heat in the tires when you're coming out.
Yeah, and the pit stops are really quick. You know, we think 13 seconds in NASCAR is quick. Yeah, well, this is much quicker.
Best, I think the best over the weekend was 2.6, I believe, for Mercedes.
Yeah.
I got to double check, but there was a few sub-3 seconds for Red Bull as well.
Well, and the air guns are just, instead of having to go around to 5 lug nuts, you basically just, it's just one big centerpiece and whoop, and off. And whoo, and you're back on.
Unless you're Haas, they can't figure it out. Everybody else seems to know how to do it.
Yeah, maybe they're like in NASCAR, where they want to complain about the air gun for the next 6 months. But so to the point, he comes out right on Gasly's Gasly comes right on Kvyat's butt, basically. And to Mike's point, it was just it's a given. He's going to pass him. His tires will heat up. He'll get back. He never did.
And Red Bull didn't go down the pit row, basically, and say, hey, let our boy by, because they are all, there's the connection. Toro Rosso is the Italian Red Bull team. This is their feeder team. So Kvyat holds on to it. Gasly has to finish outside the points in 11th. Lando Norris, I thought a really good debut. He had a long stint on a hard surface tire and was in the top 10 for much of the day. But the young Lando Norris, of all the young rookies out there, nice job. Oh, you know who we forgot? We always forget. Lance Stroll. Now, Lance Stroll's rich father, who basically took over
Racing Point. I think I skipped him for a reason.
But here's the thing, though. He didn't put a foot wrong.
No.
You know? No, he's basically – now, it's not his fault. Like, if your dad was rich and would help you become a race car driver, would you say no?
No, absolutely not.
But the thing is, I was up at the Canadian Grand Prix 2 years ago, and even the Canadian fans were booing him. It was like, daddy's boy, rich kid. But he did not make a mistake, and he finishes in a top 10 and grabbed himself 2 points.
Yeah, look, he did a good job. There's no denying this. He's kind of like a Paul Menard of NASCAR. And
yeah. Menard's home improvement shops up in the Midwest. His dad had IndyCar and racing teams for years.
Yeah, and his dad sponsors every car he's ever – he has a permanent ride in NASCAR because he brings a full-time sponsor. And that's kind of what happened with Lance Stroll. Lance Stroll got into the Williams team because they needed a little extra money. They're a low-budget team, which is one of the reasons they struggle. And Stroll comes in, and he has daddy feed him. And then when Force India had issues – daddy goes over there, buys into it. Esteban Ocon loses his ride, basically, so Lance Stroll has one. So he did a good job, and I wonder if, his best racing might be ahead of him. He's in a little bit better equipment now.
Right.
So maybe he starts to be a guy that you get. He gets a sixth and a seventh finish here and there. Maybe one day he sneaks on a podium.
Well, he had a podium at Baku last year. He was actually in second, but because he's so young and relatively inexperienced, he let Bottas pass him at the last second. So, again, nice run for Lance Stroll. I got to give him credit where credit's due. Sergio Perez, his teammate, finishes 13th. Alex Albon, the tie driver, 14th in a Toro Rosso. We already talked about Giovinazzi. Williams, a hot mess, a minute and a half back. Kubica had to pit early. Poor George Russell. Tough day for him in his debut. So the winner, as far as the rookie class, I got to give a hats off, certainly to Lando Norris. And the big story of the weekend, if you guys watched the coverage on Sky Sports, was the passing of the technical director, the guy racing director, I should say, Charlie Whiting. Put it in a NASCAR vernacular. Robin Pemberton, famous for kind of pushing the envelope as a crew chief. Well, who better to catch guys cheating than a guy that knew how to cheat? Charlie Whiting came up as a mechanic the old school way, worked for Brabham back in the day, just beloved by everyone. He's the guy that basically presses the button to start the races, dies, unfortunately, of a heart attack, basically, an embolism right before the weekend down in Australia. So a lot of guys, you saw tributes to the cars, you know, thank you, Charlie, thanks for everything, Charlie. But he was a great race director, an indomitable figure in Formula One, who embodied the ethics and spirit of the sport. He got all the – that was from Jean Todt, who now runs F1, and also great things from Lewis Hamilton, saying he was an iconic figure within the sport. So they got a new guy who is now running the show, and in case you're wondering, last name is Massey, and it will be Michael Massey stepping in to preside over the race. So the new guy running the show.
Yeah, and some – I saw this from a driver, and I apologize. I cannot remember who said it, but he said that it – this death – affected him more than any time he'd ever seen a driver pass away. And because, you know, those are guys that they're friends with. They're enemies, but they're friends as well. There's a lot of respect. And so it was tough for the sport.
It's just kind of hard to hear a race. Well, he'll have to go. He'll have to talk to Charlie Whiting, because if you screw up, you basically get called in front of Charlie Whiting, the principal, but a beloved figure in F1. All right, guys. So we see Mercedes dominate. Last year, as we said, Ferrari won in Bahrain. That's the race coming up next in the Middle East. 2017-2018, Sebastian Vettel won. Mercedes won the previous 3 years, two for Lewis, then Nico won in 16. Hopefully Ferrari's going to bounce back, because this was an uninspired performance from Sebastian Vettel, although we're excited about Charles Leclerc. And hopefully this will bode well. If Ferrari goes well there, then Haas should do well. And maybe we'll see Magnussen do a better job.
I'd love to see Magnussen replace Verstappen on the podium there. And it's not personal. Well, I guess it is a little bit personal, but I want to see Haas do well. I'd love to see the American team come into a sport and kind of say, hey, we know how to race too.
All right, I'm going to say Ferrari will not get their stuff together, and I'm going to give you – I'm going to say Lewis Hamilton gets back on top and wins this race. I'm going to go with Vettel in second. I'm going to go Max third in Bahrain. The Red Bull should be doing pretty well over there.
Okay, you know what? It's hard to not pick against Lewis, so I'll stay with Lewis, but I'm going to put Bottas in second, because
it's probably a better play. You're right.
I think you've made the point. He's motivated and he knows what's in. He's got a guy pushing him now, and his confidence is going to be high after driving, like you said, the drive of his life. And you know, I'm not going to go away from Verstappen either. I think he, with everything behind him, he's comfortable now. And I think he'll probably grab that last podium spot.
All right. You know what? I'm going to amend mine. I'm going to go with Lewis, Vettel, and Bottas. I'm going to keep Max off the podium. We'll be back, guys, after the Bahrain Grand Prix with our Formula One. Again, we want to call it Formula 101 for now, which is Mike and Squid's Grand Prix. Hope you guys are digging it, and we always appreciate your feedback. What's your Twitter handle, Squid?
It's at SquidBilly929.
And I'm Mike Bell, ATL. Hope you guys enjoy the podcast. We'll talk to you soon.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.